You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes, and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. Welcome to the Friends Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for FriendsFantasyBenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Matt Thompson. Matt, how you doing?
I washed myself off and took a long shower after we talked about the Mets because it was putrid and stinky.
It was probably a longer shower than it was to record it.
Probably, but I feel like that was my penance for this next one.
Because one's going to be a bit longer.
Right, and it should be, and it could, however long this is, it could be longer. We just stopped.
if for some reason it just goes quiet, it's because Matt passed out from talking too much. So let's just jump right into it. You can reach Matt on Twitter, at MDTompFWFB, me on Twitter, at JustinMasonFWFB. Matt, let's start with guys that are close to the majors. Who we got?
Not many. Which isn't a slight on the Padres. I don't know if we made it. Not many guys close. Trying to pull up my list here. I'm sorry. But it's a system. I guess Fernando Tatis is close. He's in Double A last year for a brief minute. But Luis Urias is your close guy. There he is. I'll start with Urias because he's probably the closest position player on this list. He's probably the best pure hitter in the minor leagues. I think the hit tool, it compares pretty favorably to like Mookie Betts when he was in the minor leagues. Cause he's got the plate skills. He's walked more than he struck out in every pro season of his career. Which is an incredible thing. Contact rate has been up over 85% at every level. Like he said, his 4 professional seasons, he's walked more than he struck out in every one of them. Why is he ranked number 6 in this system for me? Well, because he's low power projection that's showing it, and he's probably not going to be a steal asset either. Where, off the top of your head, I'm putting you on the spot here, what kind of fantasy player is DJ LeMahieu for you?
He's a guy I never own. I'd say he's probably he's like a top 150 guy. But I mean, for me, he's mostly an empty batting average. You know, he'll hit you enough home runs to be somewhat interesting, but doesn't really steal as much as he did at one point. And so for me, a guy who punts batting average, I never end up
right
with him. He always goes higher than I'm willing to go. And I think your comp that you're about to say is pretty spot on, and it gets hurt by the fact, or Urias gets hurt by the fact he's not going to be playing in Colorado.
Right, exactly. He's DJ LeMahieu minus Coors Field. Mm-hmm. So I don't think the average. I think he's a potential 300 hitter. I think he's a better overall hitter than LeMahieu, but the ballpark isn't good, so the averages are probably comparable. But, you know, he got a lot of hype in the Arizona Fall League, and while I appreciate people, like, following prospects, and I always read anything I can find about this. Like, some of the hype was a little bit out of control for what he is. Mm-hmm. For a real-life player, he's great because there's a chance Urias could stick at shortstop as well, which would – I don't know if that even helps him because I think shortstop at this day and age is a little bit deeper than second base in dynasty formats.
Second will thin, or you know, thicken up, and shortstop will thin. Is guys who can't, you know, physically stay at short,
right?
Or other prospects like, come up, you know, things like that.
Guys like Cole are not playing short anymore. He's going to lose that. Like, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You use stuff like that all the time.
But at the end of the day, like, I think shortstop is about as deep as it's ever been.
That's agreed. Yes. But see, the thing with Urias is I'm going to project him to hit 300, which I think is – you can't argue with that. He's going to put decent OBPs up. There's no argument there. I think the home run and stolen bases are going to be capped at around 10. But, you know, then you watch – I knocked the Arizona Fall League hype, but then you watch him play in the Fall Stars game on the biggest stage, and he hit a ball over 400 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't want to say that he hit one 400-foot home run means that he's going to hit, like, you know, I'm not going to bump the power upside up to 20. But
– You and also don't want to, like, over-inflate one, you know, one pitch. You know,
right, sure.
I mean, because I mean, this was a Fall Stars game where he knew a lot of people would be watching. Maybe he's trying to put on a show. This isn't a guy who's going to be going for power in San Diego.
Right, right. And I think the best part of his game is his ability to hit line drives all over the place. Like I said, he recognizes, you know, he picks up the breaking balls, doesn't strike out. The eye is crazy. The walk rates are insane. I think he could take a shortstop, which again probably helps. Maybe he gets second base and short, which would be nice. But the bat to ball skills are what you're paying for here. He could be up around the All-Star break, I'd imagine. I think the Padres, I mean, especially if they make, if say they do sign Eric Hosmer, I think they'll be more aggressive with this wave because of the wave behind them. You know what I mean? Like, your race is kind of in this wave. Of a couple guys that are knocking the door down a little bit. And there's countless guys that we'll touch on, most of them here, that are years away but have supreme upsides. Yuris doesn't have the highest fantasy upside, but I also don't want to undervalue how steady he would be in a deep league. In a 30-team league, he's more valuable than he is in a 12.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's weird to say for most fantasy prospects, but Urias falls in that category for sure.
Well, average becomes harder and harder to get the deeper and deeper you go.
Right, and you can't make – yeah, you're right. And
he'll accumulate. I mean, he's – you know, I mean, he'll be –
Never been hurt, really, yeah. Mm-hmm.
He'll be similar to what Andrelton Simmons was before Andrelton Simmons, you know, rediscovered that power stroke and added the speed. You know, is a guy that, you know, he's not flashy, but he's going to give you a good average. He's going to play every day.
Right. And that's – and he – yeah, and that's exactly what it is. And, but he hasn't played he's only had a cup of coffee at AAA, two separate cup of coffee stints. He's actually up in AAA in 2016 in a playoff run for their El Paso club. And then he went from high A to AAA for the playoff run, and then he spent 2017 in Double A. So he still has to get AAA at-bats under his belt. I haven't really seen how AJ Preller is with that. A lot of organizations don't look at AAA as a development stage. We haven't really seen Preller with that because he's kept guys like Hunter Renfroe and Manny Margot down in AAA for a while, though. Remember that? But that was because that AAA team was trying to win a championship, and there is some value in your minor leaguers winning titles as they go over. Like the guys the Tampa Bay system has, they've won championships in three of the last 4 years, that group. You know, at different levels. So there's some nice value in doing that. So I don't know if Urias will probably spend half a season in AAA is my assumption, because he's kind of a finished product in the sense that he's not going to all of a sudden, you're not waiting for him to develop. Offensively, he's a finished product. But short, I mean, you're trying to make it, if you want him to play shortstop long term, you're going to keep him down in the minors a little bit longer. But if you want him to play second base, he's going to come up now. You know what I mean? So it depends what they want to do with him on defense. But Urias is a guy that I like but don't love, and that's not a slight against him. That's just, you know, how it is. A pitching prospect that could be up relatively quick is a guy, Joey Lucchesi. He's a Double-A. He's a left-handed pitcher, 6'4", 200 pounds, fourth-round pick out of Southeast Missouri State. You know, can touch 95, sits low 90s with a heavy sinking fastball. He's kind of a high-floor guy. Has a nice curveball and changeup. Probably both projected to be average. A little bit of deception. The velocity from the left side at touching 95 is elite. He's a strike thrower. He knows how to pitch. Kind of a boring guy. Has the look of a back end guy for the ceiling, but I think he can be a little bit higher than that, especially in that ballpark and in that division. As long as you kind of fade Coors Field starts, you can probably get usefulness out of Joey Lucchesi. So, you want to touch on some of the bigger guns now?
Yeah, let's talk about the guys who are farther away but are going to have big impacts at some point.
Fernando Tatis Jr., acquired from the White Sox for the ever-popular James Shields trade. 278, 379, 498, 22 homers and 32 stolen bases as an 18-year-old in low A. 278, 379, 498, besides having some nice symmetry, is an outstanding line for a shortstop. You know, I'm going back and forth on my prospect list. Tatis and Guerrero and Eloy Jimenez, 2, 3, 4. We've touched on Eloy and we've touched on Tatis right now. I think I'm going to take the bold step and put Tatis number 2 over those other two.
Wow.
Primarily because I think he can stick at shortstop. And I know we talked about how deep shortstop is, but it could always use another high-end talent. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're going to get here. And I think Tatis, at least for the first few years of his professional career, I mean, he's only 18 years old. I think say he reaches the majors by 20, which is highly probable because he's had a cup of coffee in Double A. Say he, you know, reaches the majors at 20 years old. You could have several, 2 or 3, 2020 seasons in him before he, you know, fills out, body reaches max progressive, and the body matures enough to where he probably slows down, might have to move off a shortstop and move to third base. But 2020 seasons at shortstop, okay. Sign me up for any of that. And another thing, too, I want to touch on with it's getting ever harder and harder to project where you think shortstops or whoever are going to play on the infield. Because we've never seen shifting like this. We've never seen, you know, so your lack of range might not mean as much with a heavy shifting team, right? Mm-hmm. And the Padres, I'm not too familiar with what they do, but I do believe they are one of the heaviest shifting teams in the majors. I could be wrong on this. But that just seems like an A.J. Preller thing and an Andy Green thing. They seem very smart guys and try to kind of milk every advantage they can get out of guys. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And but I think Tatis could stick it short. So if he sticks it short, he's number 2 for me. I mean, his timetable in the last year has accelerated, in my opinion, because his 2017 season saw him end at Double A. So you got to think he starts 2018 in Double A. And when you're a Double A, you're one phone call away. Now, I know the Padres' window isn't going to match up with that, but say they do sign Hosmer, which he'd be dumb to pass that money up, to be honest. Say they do sign Hosmer, while he's not the greatest player, he's still not a bad player. He gets knocked a lot, but he's not terrible. He's better than what they have. It pushes Will Myers to the outfield, gives him 2 legit bats. Hunter Renfroe will be on the outfield corner. It's not too terrible to think they could be pushing 500 in 2019, right?
It's hard because, I mean, from a team standpoint, it looks decent, but that pitching rotation is really, really, really bad.
Right.
And
right.
And then the division is tough.
It is. But, I mean, it's not against the realm of possibility he's up in 2019. And like I said, I think he's a 2020 guy. I think ultimately he matures into a 30-homer guy with about 10 or 12 stolen bases, which is a hell of a player. Hits around 270. I got a kind of a comp for you. Not anything to do with defense, so eliminate that part of his game. Mm-hmm. But do you think Tatis could be Manny Machado?
Yes.
And I like that comp. And here's another trivia question for you. Keep in mind, I'm projecting Tatis for 30 homers at his peak. How many shortstops do you think hit 25 home runs or more in 2017?
6.
2.
Ooh.
And one of them was Paul DeJong. Mm. So I don't know if
it's not going to happen again.
Yeah, I think it will, but
I'm just ribbing you.
But I know you are. But, I mean, shortstops with that kind of power, you're looking at Tatis as a potential first-round pick in fantasy game. Mm-hmm. You get a shortstop that can hit 270 with 30 homers and 10 steals. That's a first-round pick.
That's a first-round pick, yeah.
That's Troy Tulowitzki-ish, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's a lot to love here, and I'm pretty much set as we talk about him. I think I prefer him over Eloy Jimenez for sure, which is like picking children. But mm-hmm. Everyone has a favorite kid, whether they want to admit it or not. And Mackenzie Gore is my number 2. And I like Gore a lot, but there's a substantial gap between Gore and Tatis. Mm-hmm. And some people, I'm looking at a prospect list right now that has Gore over Tatis, which is kind of crazy. But
yeah, I think that is...
It's a fantasy one, too.
Wow, I'm surprised.
you know, and I shouldn't say right now. I was looking at it earlier, but I get it because, well, I guess it was a good transition to Gore now. We pretty much touched on Tatis. I like Mackenzie Gore a lot, but I want to get this out of the way real quick. I hate that leg kick. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
He has an like a really high leg kick where his leg is almost like head level.
I'm going to pull it up the left side. Now.
Yeah, you should watch it. You'll notice it right away, obviously. I'm not a fan of it. But on the bright, on the second side, the secondary issue with that is, why would you change it? There's no reason to change it. 21 innings in a brief sample with 34 strikeouts, sub 1 whip, 1.2 ERA. I know it was only 21 innings, but dominant stuff. Low 90s with the fastball with superior command for an 18-year-old. It's a plus pitch. Pairs with a big hammer 12-6 curveball, which is a go-to out pitch. And I put that curveball up with Colby Alonso, one of the best in the minor leagues. Third pitch is the changeup, which I also think can be plus. So I'm talking 3++ pitches here. Above-average slider also. To get 4 above-average pitches, 3+. Number one starter upside. You know the risks with a high school pitching prospect. You know the risks with being a high school pitching left-handed prospect.
I hate that leg kick, by the way.
I hate it, too.
I'm watching it right now.
So do I. That's my prospect blurb. That's what I start. I want to give up. Let's get this out of the way real quick. I hate the leg kick, but why would you change it? There's no reason, right?
I mean, oh, God. Yeah, he's a good guy, and maybe I'll send the video over to Doug Thorburn and see what he says.
I'm sure Doug's seen him before. I mean,
his knee is almost hitting
his chin.
His shoulder. Like, I just.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I mean, it's. That is such a weird. I mean, I'm watching his foot and seeing where it lands.
It's good delivery, though. Everything else is sound. You can tone that leg kick down and still have a sound delivery. But again, he's been successful
at
every
level.
Why would
you change it? I worry about how repeatable it is.
It is, though. His command is great. He's athletic. He's going to have to work on the body when he gets older to maintain it, but nothing in his profile says he's not a tireless worker and, you know, wouldn't be able to do it.
Yeah, I wouldn't buy it, but, God, yeah, no, it's I'm literally just watching pitch after pitch after pitch of this guy right now as we're talking.
He's fascinating, isn't it? He's real fun to watch, and he's going to be in the Midwest League in 2018, and their Midwest affiliate is in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Hopefully he comes to Kane County, which is the closest park to me, but I wouldn't be opposed to driving out to Fort Wayne and watching him, because if he's not coming to Kane County, I will drive out there and see him, because this is a talent that I think is incredible. I think he's probably a number two for fantasy realm, because I don't know if he's going to blow it away with the strikeouts. And how many left-handers are honestly number ones in fantasy game? Just Kershaw, right?
Yeah, I just saw a breaking pitch that was
pretty, 12-6. That's a hammer curveball, 12-6 curveball.
Yeah, that was impressive.
And he has an above-average slider, plus-plus changeup, plus-plus curve. It's a phenomenal package. It's $6.7 million for the Padres to sign him. He was number three pick in the draft. He's going to move really slow, as he should.
The arm itself is really impressive.
Arm speed is great. The motion is great. Yeah, it's just the leg kick I don't like.
Yeah, that leg kick.
But again, why are you going to change it?
I keep saying that, but what? Yeah,
he's not going to risk that. I guess we'll move on to the next high upside arm. This one's a little bit different, and it's kind of probably not the arm a lot of people are thinking I'm going to say, being a prospect hound out here. But Anderson Espinoza, for me, is number three. Kind of the forgotten man. You should take him in RDI, Justin.
I may.
He's recovering from Tommy John surgery, so that drives the price down. But he's a bit of a forgotten man, and he was the most – you know, he's top 30 prospect on every other list last year until he got hurt, right? Mm-hmm. And last year in my write-up on him, I wrote down how similar his development was to, like, Alex Reyes and how similar the stuff is. And while I'm not saying he's Alex Reyes, he has a pretty damn good chance of being that. Mid-90s fastball with enormous run. devastating changeup, which is his best off speed pitch, and I love that. That's my favorite thing. When a guy has a plus changeup, that's the tits for me, because that's a field pitch, and it's really hard to teach someone a changeup. You either have it or you don't, because you slow the arm speed down and all that stuff. And not only is his plus, he locates it wherever he wants, and he has the 12-6 hammer curveball to go with it. All three have a chance to be plus. Big-time stuff, electric stuff. One of the best arms in the minor leagues when he's healthy. The delivery is similar to Reyes. The body at his age is similar to Reyes. Reyes kind of boomed up a little bit when he got a little older, but now everything I've been reading about Reyes now is he worked with Zach Duke, who also had Tommy John with the Cardinals, and they were rehabbing together, and supposedly Reyes looks phenomenal, lost a ton of weight. So if Espinoza can do the same thing through his rehab and through his Tommy John, he's a fantastic buy low candidate and throw into any trade right now. He's even a target to go get. I love Espinoza. He's not going to pitch until the latter half of 2018. And he's the guy that I regret not seeing in when he was in low A, or when he was kind of around me, because I don't think he's going to go back to low A. But I've seen a lot of people hedge their bets and say mid-rotation. I'm still standing by top of the rotation guy for Espinoza. He's a tough guy to rank because he's, you know, recovering from Tommy John. He's going to miss most of the season, but I still think he's going to be in my top 40.
I think that's fair. I mean, you don't want to downgrade guys too much, especially right. Guys who were far away to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think that now is the buy low time on a guy like Espinoza.
Right, because I keep saying, keep comparing him to Reyes, but the timetable is kind of similar, but it's also not. Because Reyes, you know, was a major leaguer and then had Tommy John. And now he's going to come back and be a major leaguer. But they had Tommy John about the same time in the season. Does that make sense? Like, Espinoza had it early on in 2016, so it kind of wiped out the season. Early on in 2017, I should say. Wiped out his season. He's going to come back. They're going to take it slow with him. But it's a good time to get on board because he hasn't pitched in over a year in a competitive game, so he's going to have no numbers. People are going to forget about him. So go get him now and ride that because he's a stud. The delivery is clean. It's a lot to like, and he's not getting talked about. My number four guy is getting more publicity than him, and that's Michelle Baez. I mentioned him on your show with Laura Michaels, I don't know if you remember him.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff is unreal. $3 million signing out of Cuba in 2016 that didn't put any airwaves or any waves out there at all. But he destroyed the Midwest League. 63 innings, 2.5 ERA, 89 strikeouts in 63 innings with 10 walks. 6'8 frame plus fastball that sits 95 to 98. But he throws it a lot, and one of the knocks on him is he almost throws it too much. But again, being, you know, he's born in 1996, so he's going to turn 20 here in a week, or 22 in about a week or so, January. He'll turn 22 in a couple of weeks. He's a little bit older, but again, it's his first season stateside, so you want to put him in a nice, comfortable environment. So what he does next year is going to be huge. He's going to be up in Double A, facing an advanced competition. Needs to develop a second pitch that's more consistent, but he has a changeup that flashes plus. I'm not willing to put that tag on it yet because it's a little bit inconsistent. But and then he also has a curveball that I think is probably going to be average. Baez is an outstanding pitcher. You watch him pitch; the delivery is nice. He's 6'8", and he's going to have trouble repeating, and sometimes he does. But for someone that dominated low A, there's a really high risk of him becoming a reliever here. But that shouldn't deter you from owning him because he'll be a high, you know, he'll be a dominant late inning reliever. But he needs to work on his sequencing and developing his third pitch better, which also kind of ties into him being so fastball reliant. Major leaguers are going to hit a fastball. So that third pitch doesn't even have to be great. The changeup needs to be a little bit better. And you could be looking at a potential number two starter in fantasy, similar to like an Alec Hansen for the White Sox. Or you could be looking at a dominant late inning reliever that just blows everybody away, because late inning relievers can be fastball reliant. You want them to be, right? Because you want them to throw strikes and get the strike. Like, you look at a guy, I'm not comparing him, but Aroldis Chapman is a big, tall, lanky guy. As a starter, Aroldis Chapman is not going to sit where he does what he throws now. He's not going to sit 102, right? As a starter, he's not going to do that, but being in the bullpen allows him to do that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying Baez is going to hit 102, but I am saying he's going to hit 100 as a reliever. And I think he could be a potential nasty late inning reliever, but I can also see why the Padres, with their win expectancy and where their franchise is at right now, are in no rush to turn a guy like this into a reliever. But either way, that's a valuable asset in fantasy. But if he turns into a reliever, you might be disappointed. But the saves are still a category last time I checked. So
they're a big category.
Right. And actually a frustrating one that you spend chasing a lot of times.
Especially in Dynasty.
Right. And my next guy, he's kind of a half a tier lower, but I'm going to do Cal Quantrill. Mm-hmm. First round pick in 2016. I was very high on him when he was drafted. I'm a little bit cooler on him now, but I still like him. He's second generation arm, obviously, with his dad being a reliever for a lot of good teams for a lot of years. Two plus pitches, mid-90s fastball, plus changeup. The delivery is straight over the top. He throws a high fastball and then uses his changeup and curveball off of the high fastball. He also throws a slider, which I think he can become average as well. When I watch him pitch, though, I'm a Cardinal fan, so maybe this is what I see. But when I watch him pitch, he's got the delivery, the frame are similar. How he pitches is similar, with relying on the high fastball and using the curveball off of that and the changeup off of that. But he's very similar to Michael Wacha for me. Right down to how he pitches, the bulldog attitude on the mound. Kind of a finished product. He went to Stanford, got hurt. If he didn't have Tommy John out of Stanford, he might be in the major leagues right now. But as of right now, he's in Double A. He's going to be in Triple A next year. Might be ready to make an impact. But again, Padres, probably no rush to bring him up. He's, you know, strikeout per inning guy, which I kind of project him to be in the majors. He's going to be inside my top 100, probably in the 60 to 70 range. I like Quantrill a lot. I'm a little bit cooled on him, but I think he can be a long-term number three for fantasy. And I think Michael Wacha is I'm going to toot my own horn. I think it's a perfect comp. I like how he pitches, and I think it's Michael Wacha is a good number three or four right now in fantasy, wouldn't you say? Mm-hmm. I mean, and I think that's what Quantrill falls into, kind of that borderline three or four, kind of in that basket. We touched on Urias, who's my number six guy. My number seven guy is a Cuban that they signed for $11 million in 2016, Adrian Morejon. I'm kind of a little bit lower on him than the industry seems to be. I'm not in love with the ceiling. A lot of people think the ceiling is really high here. I don't see that, but what I do see is someone that's incredibly advanced for their age. The body doesn't have much projection. He's a little bit thicker. Not fat by any means, but he's got a lower half for a 6-foot frame. He's a little smallish. Again, first year stateside, so I'm not putting too much stock in the numbers, but he did go in over 63 innings, 58 strikeouts, and 16 walks. So the command is there. He's advanced for the age. Plus fastball, again, 92-94 with a changeup with good tumble and fade, which is away from right-handed hitters, which is what you want. Inconsistent breaking ball, but he throws it a lot. So hopefully he can get it to click. Very smooth, very repeatable delivery, some natural deception. He hides the ball behind his body very well. Throws a lot of strikes, probably too many, but you want him to do that. His first year stateside, you want him to throw a lot of strikes. You want him to throw a lot of strikes, develop from there. Again, like I touched on earlier, not much projection physically in the body. Hard to see him for me as a one or two guy. But I think he's a high-floor mid-rotation arm. So I think he has a really good chance of – there's a chance he could be the best pitcher of this bunch. And if I had to bet my life on it, I probably would pick him. You know what I mean? Because he's the safest guy. But I do ultimately think he settles in as a mid-rotation guy, number four or five on your fantasy squad, just because he doesn't get enough strikeouts from me. I think he's going to be probably a 7.5 to 8 strikeout per nine guy, and that's helped out by being in the National League.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's gonna be a nice ratio guy. I don't want to see Ivan Nova because he's going to strike out more guys than that. But who's another guy like that? I'm like blanking. Prospects on my mind. A guy that doesn't walk too many guys, but is also not going to strike out that many. Like a souped up version of Kendall Graveman.
Yeah, I think it's fair.
Little better stuff, comparable ballpark, but in the league. And I think Morejon is worth owning because he's a guy that can move fast. If you want to get, he can make his debut in 2019 if the Padres want to push it. Again, there's no reason to, but they could be if they sign Hosmer or commit that money to somebody else in the next offseason, he could be up soon. So he's a guy to watch. Again, keep the expectations in check, but he's a guy. He's a dude. Next guy, Estiary Ruiz. I don't know if you remember him at all. He got some publicity when he was traded from the Royals in the kind of the Trevor Cahill, Brandon Mauer, Ryan Buchter deal. Signed for $100,000 out of the Dominican Republic by the Royals in 2015. Absolutely destroyed the Dominican Summer League in 2016, and then followed it up with an Arizona League campaign this year after getting traded, which I don't know if this will play, Justin. You tell me. 350, 395, and he slugged 602.
That's okay.
With four homers and 26 stolen bases.
Wow.
I think that'll play. Mm-hmm. Projecting him out in the future is fun because he's got the type of body. He's 6'150". And he's already hit four home runs as a 19-year-old in rookie ball, which is an encouraging sign. He's already hit for a ridiculous 62 extra base hits in only 108 professional games. Has above average speed and plus baseball acumen. As you can tell by the 26 stolen bases, gets more out of the speed than he should at that young age already. I'm comfortably projecting him to hit 30 stolen bases in his prime and also hit 20 home runs. He's quite a long ways away. But he's the type of guy that in fantasy leagues you need to invest on and jump on early, because if you let him get to full season ball and he puts up numbers that are even 80% of what I just told you, you're never getting it. You need to take the chance on him and on a guy named Estiary Ruiz now. If you want to know his first name is spelled Estiury and Ruiz, Ruiz. He's a second baseman and shortstop. Kind of split some time there. Ultimately, I think he's a second baseman, but he's a hell of an athlete. It would not surprise me if he played the hell out of second base and was able to play shortstop. He's a high upside guy, as high as it gets, but he's also a super low floor because he's so young. But Estiary Ruiz is a guy that I'm gambling on, and I'm looking forward to carrying my RotoWire Dynasty Invitational team 10 years from now, because he's going to be a monster. In case you didn't know, Padres have a lot of high upside guys.
Yeah, they do.
Next guy on my list is Jason Rosario, except it's spelled Jeisson, so maybe it's Heisson. I don't know. Not good pronunciation. $1.85 million he signed for. I think he's a potential leadoff hitter. 299, 404, 369. One home run, 8 stolen bases, and rookie ball. Defensive skills in center are plus, above average speed. Leadoff hitter type. Probably not your cup of tea, Justin, because he's probably batting average and OBP dependent. But he should get enough stolen bases to be relevant. But he's an athlete, and athletes like him typically take a long time to reach full maturity. But I think he's going to be a high impact batting average and stolen base guy, a nice above average OBP threat. Probably a better real life player because of the defense. But if the stolen base totals get up to 30 or so, he might be a better fantasy player. Makes a decent amount of contact for his age, 81% in rookie ball. Strong walk rate, like I mentioned, 15%. So I think he's a dude that's worth tracking for sure. Next guy on my list, I kind of skipped over him. I forgot to mention him and the guys that are close to the major leagues, which my apologies here. Remember Franchy Cordero?
Mm-hmm.
All he did this season in AAA was go 326, 369, 603 with 17 homers and 15 bags. If he would have spent a whole season in AAA, he would have easily eclipsed the 2020 mark because he only played 93 games and went 17-15. He got a cup of coffee in San Diego, hit 228, 276, 424 in 30 games. A few things jump out here. Number one, according to StatCast, he covered the most ground in center field of anybody after he got called up. So he's rangy as hell with speed. So take that for what it's worth. That has to translate offensively, at least to the speed department. Second thing you jump out at you is the approach is fucking terrible. Walk rate was only 5.5% in AAA, and is actually better than that in the major leagues in a small sample. But I attribute a lot of that to, I think he hit eighth in a few games.
Mm-hmm.
So that can skew numbers fairly quickly. Strikeout rate was near 30%, and it was 44% in the bigs. He used to be a shortstop. He takes bad routes in the outfield, but he can cover a shit ton of ground, as I just got done explaining to you. I think he can become average with more time out there. He's only become a full-time center fielder for about a year and a half now.
He's not going to play center, though, in San Diego.
No, not with Margot there. But that kind of puts him in a weird situation because his outfield range is probably the best thing he offers you defensively now. I guess you put him in left.
They've got a number of guys who can play. So,
right.
He's like, it's weird because you're right, because he is close to the majors, but at the same time,
like, not so much. Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird to say someone is blocked in San Diego, but he is kind of blocked, especially if for some reason they do sign Hosmer and have to move Will Myers to the outfield.
Yeah, right, especially that. And then speaking of blocked, then if they do sign Will Myers, my next guy, Josh Naylor, he'd be pretty blocked. Made an error writing his stats. I just caught that on my thing. I'm going to go get a stat line right now. I have the same stat line as the hitter before him because I've copy and pasted it like a dummy and didn't change it for Naylor. Josh Naylor, I'm going to look up the stat line real quick. It's important for him to not know what the stat line really is, though, because he's only 20 years old and he's played in AA already. And he's always been in extreme pitcher parks. He's never been in an offensive park. We talked about him in depth kind of last year. Former first-round pick of the Marlins. He stabbed a guy, so he's got that.
I think he was the stabber.
No, the stabby was.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, no, the stabby was, what's his name?
He's not even a prospect anymore. I'm blanking on the name, but Naylor got stabbed, and it was a prank, not like brutally stabbed. I think it was like scissors or something, or like either way, not cool. But all he's done in AA, 280, 340s, or last year between high A and AA. He was in the National League last year and AA. And before you say anything.
It was Stone Garrett.
That's it. Stone Garrett. You're right. That's it. And blank, I can't think. I have a one track mind today. Well, I guess which is good for these. But
I love all the articles. Knife prank. I'm sorry. Right, there is no prank that involves a knife that is a good idea at any point.
Right. Naylor spent all of 2017 in the Cal League and double A, high A and double A. Cal League is the pitcher's league. Now, the two highest offensive ballparks in that league folded. The teams folded. And the Cal League is a pitcher's park now. Pitcher's league, mostly. A lot of the arms in that league, the talent level in the Cal League this year was probably at an all-time low from everything I've read. But between those two stops and two pitcher parks, he hit 280, 346, and slugged 415 with 10 home runs, 25 doubles, though, and two triples and 9 stolen bases. Now, the stolen bases, get those out of your head, those aren't happening. When he's a left-handed swinger, draws body comps to Prince Fielder, so he's not stealing bases. He's just a smart baseball player. I do think he can hit 20 home runs easy in the pros. What he gets time to fill out and when he, reaches maturity. I just wish he got talked about more in prospect circles because he's better than he is. gets buried because he's in pitcher's parks all the time. He's always been extremely young for every level he's been at, and he's a first base prospect. So those are three huge strikes against you as far as production goes. But there's nothing wrong. I mean, in the fantasy sense, there is. But in a real-life standpoint, he could be Eric Hosmer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just without the ground balls.
Yeah.
And it's just going to take an incredible amount of time to get there. And I feel like he'll be a guy you could steal from fantasy owners if you offered him in trades. You could, like, flat-out steal him, I think. Just because I don't know how many people are probably turned off by him because the numbers don't jump off the page. For first base prospects, you always hear how they have to mash, right?
Mm-hmm.
First base have to mash throughout their whole career. They're never going to make it. And there's a lot of variables here, and I'm betting on him for the future. Another pitcher, I don't want to go too much on Eric Lauer because I think he pretty much is what he is at this point. A low 90s fastball, touches 94 with a natural cutting action, locates it wherever he wants, above average slider, solid changeup, and decent curveball. I think he's a number four starter long-term and now. I think you call him up now, he's ready to go. Kent State, he's out of Kent State. He ultimately led all Division I all Division I arms in his with a .69 ERA at Kent State, .69, which is pretty nice. It was a Cape Cod League standout. And a lot of teams got the Cape Cod League heavily, and the Padres are one of them. Mid-rotation arm for me, number four for fantasy. Don't sleep on Eric Lauer because he's the type of guy that can lower your rate stats, help you out a lot. Let's see who else. Jorge Ohna, another big international prospect from Cuba, signed him for $11 million. He got a $7 million bonus. Ohna did. And he looks the part, big physical specimen, chiseled like a Mr. Universe. But I guess my problem with Jorge Ohna is I don't think the athleticism is going to play at the major, below average speed. I think he's a left fielder just because of the outfield skills aren't that great. And I don't know how much an outfielder that's going to be capped at 20 home runs, in my opinion, how valuable that is from a fantasy standpoint. Because I think from the Padres, with what their organization plans are, a lot of these young studs are going to get moved to the outfield. And I misspoke on Ohna. He's actually a decent outfielder, so he probably should play right. But he's got, 20 home runs ride and probably 8 to 10 steals, and he's probably going to hit .260. And that's nothing that's – he reminds me of the dude, the right fielder that the Royals had this year. I'm forgetting the name. I can't think of anybody's name today. It's driving me crazy.
Anyways.
Yeah, sorry. Bonifacio, that's him. Jorge Bonifacio. Kind of similar to that. Not high upside by any means, in my opinion. Other people will tell you otherwise. I just don't think the hit tools mature enough. I'm not looking at the highest ceiling. I think he's more of a high four hitter. 277, 351, 405 in low A. Only made contact 72% of the time, walked 9% of the time, 11 homers, 8 steals. So I don't think that's all that crazy exciting. Logan Allen's a nice left-handed arm that I like. I think he's a solid lefty mid-rotation arm, low 90s, touch 94, really good, really, 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 really good curveball. Nice changeup, he needs to use him more. Doesn't have a plus pitch to go to in the bag, but I still like Logan Allen. Jacob Nix pitched with the Padres last season, kind of rushed up there. Above average command, kind of builds up the whole profile. Mid-90s fastball, touches 97. Curveball and changeup have both improved. I think he's ultimately a sneaky number three or four in the fantasy realm, but not now. But he should pitch in the Padres in the majors this year. He's a UCLA draft pick. He was involved. Remember Brady Aiken and all that signing thing?
Mm-hmm.
Houston was going to use the money when they signed Aiken. They used that leftover bonus money to sign Jacob Nix. But when they lost Aiken, they lost that money, so they lost Nix. And they lost another guy with the Giants, who surprisingly I can't remember his name either because I can't remember anybody's name today. So they lost all those guys. So he's got the pedigree. Houston wanted to pay him big money. But he was a third-round pick out of UCLA. UCLA commits are always nice. So he's a nice guy to track. I'm trying to figure out Mason Thompson, high-volume arm, 91-93 with easy delivery. I think he's going to be 95-96 when he gets bigger. 6'7", 186.
Wow.
So he's going to fill out.
Yeah, he's going to add some weight.
Yeah. Mid-90s heat, I think, is coming with two average secondaries on the changeup and the curveball. Gets a lot of swing and misses. Quality mid-rotation arm with over strikeout per inning upside. He's just going to walk a little bit too many guys. But you'll take the strikeout upside. If you can pair him with like a Morihone or somebody, like I said earlier, kind of erase some of that. Luis Almanzar is a tooled-up middle infield prospect I like. Didn't produce in low A, or in rookie ball, I'm sorry. I'm not really going to read off the numbers. There's no point because he's that young, but he's a high upside guy, so just watch him. Chris Paddock, former Marlins prospect that is a massive monster strikeout guy, but missed last season with Tommy John. I need to pull up the numbers real quick, and I want to show the strikeout totals don't do it justice without me reading them off. The stuff is legitimate. He owns a career 1.54 ERA in 20 big league game or 20 minor league games. In 87 professional innings, he has 110 strikeouts. Okay, fine. But in 2016, in 42 innings pitched, he had 71 strikeouts and 5 walks.
Whoa.
20 hits allowed, 71 strikeouts and 5 walks in 42 innings. Opponents hit 139 off of him. I don't give a shit what level you're playing in. If you do that, I'm going to track you. Mm-hmm. Nine games, 9 starts, 42 innings, 0.85 ERA, 0.59 whip. Again, don't know if he's healthy yet now, coming off of Tommy John. Don't know if he's going to be fully recovered. But that's the dude back, and you can get him for literally free because no one talks about him. Austin Allen, don't like catching prospects. But I do like catching prospects that hit. And he hits. I think he's potential to – hold on. Let me find him. My notes are scattered with these guys because I'm right in the middle of writing this system up in my guide right now. So Austin Allen, you're looking at a catching prospect, 283, 353 OBP, 497 slug, 31 doubles, 22 homers in the pitching-heavy Cal League. Going to be in Double-A next season, big test for him. So he's a guy, left-handed swinger, 6'4", 225, looks the part out of Florida INT, which isn't really a big baseball school, but he's a fourth-round pick out of that, so it shows you a little bit of what the Padres think they have here. This system is crazy. It's what AJ Preller has done here. They should build a statue of him outside the park. Gabriel Arias is a nice stud, plus defensive shortstop. Right now, he doesn't really show much of the offensive value, but I project him to have plus power as he matures. Showed a little bit of flashes this year, and he was an 18-year-old that was already playing low A, which is 17-year-old, excuse me, 17-year-old was already playing in low A, which is insane. Obviously, he's extremely raw on defense. The Venezuelan kid is tearing up the Australian Baseball League right now this winter, showing some power, right-handed here, gap-to-gap right now. Ultimately, I think he could hit 20 home runs as a shortstop, so he's a dude to follow. Luis Campusano, a second-round pick in 2017, is a catcher, one of the best catching prospects in the draft defensively. Has a long swing, can hit 20 home runs, though, so I think his batting average will be capped about 230, 240, but he can hit 20 home runs as a catcher. That's valuable. I'll never quit Michael Geddes. 254, 329, 431, 22 stolen bases, 17 homers, 4 triples, 22 doubles. Loudest tools in the game, just don't make contact. If he could make contact at a league average clip, he'd be a top 20 prospect in the game. He just doesn't. He strikes out way too much, 40%, 30%. Just the strikeout rates are that high. The tools are unbelievable. I love him a lot, and I can't quit an athlete like that. Hudson Potts, first round pick in 2016. 20 home runs in low A, 23 doubles, 253, 293 OBP. So obviously you can find the wart right there. Doesn't walk a lot. Has plus raw power. Real strong kid. Uses leverage. Very pull happy. Can pull anything. Doesn't really go the other way. But 19 years old, hit 20 home runs in low A is a hell of an accomplishment in itself. So Hudson Potts is yet another high upside guy in this system. But he's also got his warts because, like I said, 293 OBP with a 253 average. I expect him to at least spend part of the season in low A next year because that, you know, he needs to work on those plate skills. So this system is crazy. I feel like I'm forgetting another guy, but I think that'll pretty much cover it. But I don't know. I think it has everything you want. It has the upside in Tatis to be, you know, this his upside with what he has is probably better than almost anyone but Acuna, and he could be better than Acuna if he could stick a shortstop. He might have higher upside. You look at all these Latin American guys down below. Reggie Lawson's another pitcher I didn't touch on. 89 strikeouts and 73 innings in low A. They have a nice relief pitcher in Trey Wingarder, who I'm going to be making sure I grab when he comes up this year. Potential back-end option if they trade Brad Hand. Nasty stuff. Sam Keating was their fourth-round pick this year. 94 miles an hour this spring. As a draft pick out of high school, hit 94 with a slider that probably is projected as his out pitch. Jordy Barley is a defensive first shortstop who I think can hit. I like the swing. I don't like the plate approach right now. He strikes out a little bit too much, but he's 18 and he played in rookie ball, so anything he does can change. Yuji Rosario had a rough go of things in low A. Sent him back down to rookie ball, and he recovered nicely. 282, 363 OBP, 16 stolen bases in 50 games. 20 extra base hits, one home run. So he's going to grow into it. Another middle infield guy because they don't have enough of those. Blake Hunt is another offensive catcher in this organization they have plenty of. I think his bat lags significantly behind his other catchers we talked about. But he's a guy nonetheless. Mason House. Third-round pick in 2017. For a football player, he was teammates with Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs quarterback. 6'2", 190. Extreme athlete. Switch hitter. Throws left-handed. 6 doubles, 8 triples, and 2 homers in 39 games. 293, 354, 480, 63 in the Arizona League. This does a better job of explaining anything on the Padres system than anything I could tell you. You know, each team's got a rookie ball team, right? In Arizona League, some teams are in Florida. Mm-hmm. The Padres have 2 Arizona League teams.
Wow.
Because they have so much young talent. They have no choice. They had to make 2 teams.
That's crazy.
And that's the only team that has that. The Yankees, I take that back, the Yankees have 2 teams in Florida. One team is they're Tampa Yankees or Florida State Yankees or Rookie League Yankees 1, Rookie League Yankees 2, pretty much. And that's what they do out here. Arizona League Padres 1, Arizona Padres 2. And those 2 teams are so stacked, they have 2 farm systems in rookie ball. I had a scout, Chris Kusiolek. He's on Twitter, Cali Chris. He was on the Fantrax radio show. Does an excellent breakdown. If you want further breakdown, breakdown of the players I gave you. He did Fantrax. He was outstanding stuff. He gets in Arizona games, and he sees this system. Eric Longenhagen and all them were talking about the Padres, Eric Longenhagen said he had multiple scouts tell him they've never seen this much talent on the field at one time in the Padres instructional league. It is just filthy what they have here.
And if you don't believe us, we just went 53 minutes, or almost 54 minutes at this point, on a mini pod.
My bad. But sorry, not sorry, though, because I could go 53 more, because I'm not going to bore you. If you want more information about Padres prospects, hit me up on Twitter. I'll gladly have this conversation with you.
Grab the draft guide, because that'll be a long section.
Grab this draft guide, because my top 100, each team I'm limiting to 20 write-ups, but the top 400 list is going to have more than 20 Padres in it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, hit me up on Twitter, whatever you want. I'll ask any questions about the Padres because I don't want to talk for another 45 minutes, which I could. And it's an incredible amount of talent.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap us up for this episode. You can reach Matt on Twitter at MDFWF or MDTompFWFB, me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. And, yeah, that's going to do it. So for Matt and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.